You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. This is Carl Stern here, and I've got a couple questions for you. Do you ever get frustrated that you can't watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised or available in your country? With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country that is showing the sports event you want to watch so you don't miss out and can watch the action live. You may have heard VPNs are great for online protection, but they slow down your internet speed. Luckily, NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. You won't even notice it's running, so you can stream and game online with no buffering or lagging. Furthermore, NordVPN prevents your internet service provider from bandwidth throttling, so you can have a consistently reliable internet connection. It's the price of a cup of coffee every month, a small price to pay for premium cybersecurity and access to a vast amount of entertaining content from all over the world. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/F4W to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan for 4 months free. Is completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Let me tell you that link again. It's nordvpn.com/F4W. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the When It Was Cool Wrestling Podcast, or if you're WrestlingObserver.com, the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. Thank you very much for joining me. This is one of the most anticipated shows of the year. This is one of my most popular shows. We get the largest listenership, so I'm making this show available everywhere I possibly can. This is the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame Ballot Discussion. Yes, we have the 2022 Hall of Fame Ballot. I'm not even going to pretend to be able to get all this in one show. We never do. And this year, there are a lot more people added to the ballot. Some rule changes and much, much more. So let's get on with the jibber jabber and get right to it. All right. So the ballot, as received from Dave, says as follows. Yes, it's that time of year, time for the 2022 Hall of Fame elections. This ballot is being sent out to major wrestling stars, past and present, major management figures in the industry, writers, and historians. And I believe I fall in the historian category. If you're getting this, you're being asked your opinion on who should be inducted into this year's Hall of Fame class. The criteria for the Hall of Fame is a combination of drawing power, being a great in-ring performer, or excelling in one's field in pro wrestling, as well as having historical significance in a positive manner. A candidate should either have something to offer in all three categories or be someone so outstanding in one or two of those categories they deserve inclusion. The names listed below are those under consideration for this year. To be eligible, a performer must have reached their 35th birthday and completed 10 years since their debut as a full-time performer, or be someone who has been a full-time pro wrestler for at least 15 years. Longevity should be a prime consideration rather than a hot 2 or 3 year run, unless someone is so significant as a trendsetter or a historical figure in the business or valuable to the industry that they need to be included. However, just longevity, without being either a long-term main eventer or a top draw or a top caliber in-ring performer, should be seen as relatively meaningless. There are a number of changes to the rules this year, so ears perk up. Let's pay attention. What's changed? First, the 10-person ballot, which was taken from baseball, makes no sense here because there are far too many people on the ballot for a 10-vote minimum. Going forward, we will be doing a 5-vote maximum per category and 15 total. But for this year, because of the introduction of so many tag teams, It will be 8 vote maximum in North America historical category and 5 vote maximum in all other categories, and 18 votes total allowed for this year. So that's, that is so convoluted. I'm going to have to literally make a note and post that by my computer so I can remember how many people I can vote in each category. That's really complicated, but that's the rules. So let's remember that. The main one I'll be voting in anyway will be the North American historical category. So I'll be allowed 8 votes in that one. So just keep that in mind. A change for this year has to do with tag teams. So let's listen. I've always had a problem with the way tag teams were done here. Seems like tag teams individually were held to the same standards as individual wrestlers. And what you ended up with then was tag teams like, you would say, unquestionably, the Rock and Roll Express is, in my opinion, unquestionably, and I pushed for years for the Rock and Roll Express to get in. They're Hall of Famers without a doubt in my mind. But so many people hated it so badly to see Robert Gibson get in the Hall of Fame that they just could never bring themselves to vote for it. Well, I would make the same argument for the Midnight Express. I mean, I love Dennis Condrey. I think Dennis Condrey's great. Is he a solo Hall of Famer? Not even close. Yet, he's in there. But, again, within the wrestling industry, there's a lot of dislike toward Robert Gibson as far as the Rock and Roll Express. Maybe that's something we can get into sometime. But anyway, they got in. So, to me, it just never worked right the way tag teams were done. So we're changing it. So let's see if the new way is better, worse, or just different. A change for this year has to do with tag teams. The original idea is that if someone is in, they are in. And the idea of two-time Hall of Famer made no sense. And what he's saying there is, let's just take in the case of the Rock and Roll Express. Let's just say Ricky Morton had this great solo career as well. Would you vote him in twice? I mean, this has happened several times in the WWE Hall of Fame, right? Where one person gets in as themselves, part of a faction, part of a tag team. The NWO comes to mind, Generation X, so on and so forth. All right, so let's see what Dave's solution to this is. However, in certain situations, there were Hall of Fame tag teams where one person was already in, so the second person would have to be in on their own. Such as in this election, for example, Miguel Perez, Jerry Briscoe, or Akira Taue, rather than as part of a team, which would be their strongest argument. While we have always had tag teams, and there have been tag team wrestlers who we have put on the ballot who are already in from a different team, we hadn't done that with singles wrestlers. However, for teams like the Funk Brothers, Ray Stevens and Nick Botwinkle, Stevens and Patterson, Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta, Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody, or Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki, we are not putting them on the ballot because both members of the team are already in. But there are teams added who should be considered only as the team, not for their entire career, such as singles runs. And again, I think that's one of the things that held the Rock and Roll Express back for so long, is that neither Ricky Morton, but especially Robert Gibson, had the credentials as a singles performer. And so people based on that wouldn't vote them into the Hall of Fame, despite the fact that the Rock and Roll Express were, a very innovative, hot, popular tag team, all the criteria that eventually did get them into the Hall of Fame. The election is broken down into a number of categories. You should check each category for wrestlers that you feel you're familiar enough with based on the geography that you've either traveled or are familiar with, and based on the time you have followed pro wrestling. You do not have to vote for a wrestler in every category you've checked. The ballot is also broken down to wrestlers and those who are not pro wrestlers but have been valuable parts of the industry. The maximum number of wrestlers you can vote for all the categories is 18 this year. You can pick as few as 0 if you don't believe anyone on the list deserves inclusion. For wrestling executives, managers, announcers, and others outside the ring performers, you can vote for them and they are not counted against the 18. You can vote for as many as 5 of them as well. All responses are confidential. There's nothing to worry about politically about any involvement in this process. Your selections will not be revealed unless you choose to do so, and I probably will. I won't decide at this time. I'll probably give strong hints and talk out loud and just sort of vent about some of my thoughts about these people. And by the time it's time to send in my ballot, I'll make it public. I usually always do that. I'll probably put up an article, as a matter of fact, at my website, whenitwascool.com, if anybody's interested in looking at that. Dave continues, anyone who receives mention on 60% of the ballots from the geographical region and time frame, broken down as continental United States and Canada, Mexico, Japan, and the rest of the world, will be added to the Hall of Fame class of 2022. If you're unfamiliar with any of the candidates due to geography of having never seen them, that is fine. Ballots are sent to many people from all over the world and from different wrestling cultures so that everyone has as fair a shot as possible. The breakdown for modern and historical performers is 30 years ago or 1992. So if the last year the person was a headliner or a key figure in the industry was prior to 1992, they would be in the historical class. And I think there's some typos in that. I think there's a couple people categorized wrong here, which we'll get to, I'm sure, in a moment. But it should make sense once we get there. All performers who receive mention on 10% up to 59.9% of the ballots from their geographical region or era will remain on the ballot for consideration next year. All those who receive less than 10% of the vote will be dropped from next year's ballot. They can return in 2 years based on if there is significant feedback from voters who say they will vote for them. This is mostly for wrestlers who are still active, who may improve their career legacy, but can be for retired wrestlers if voters believe they should be put on or returned to the ballot. In addition, following the lead of the Baseball Hall of Fame, which is the model here, we have a 15-year rule. The following candidates have been on the ballot since 2007. In baseball, this would be their last year of eligibility. Here, if they don't get at least 50% of the vote in this year's election, they will be removed from the ballot. If they are modern candidates, they can be brought back in the historical performers era in 2 years if it is more than 30 years since their career as a Hall of Fame level performer is up. So, who's our three people that are in danger of getting dropped from the ballot? There are, as I said, three of them who must get 50% of the vote to remain or get voted in or they're gone. And those three are three very interesting names. They are Sergeant Slaughter, Enrique Torres, and Rocky Johnson. Now, let's talk about those three real quick. We'll just start right there. And Sergeant Slaughter, you know I have voted for Sergeant Slaughter many times. I feel like he is a legit Hall of Famer. He, especially early in his career, his match standards were well on par with a Hall of Famer. It was only late in his career that his in-ring work declined. When you judge Sergeant Slaughter based on his feud with, say, the Iron Sheik or Pat Patterson, or his team with Don Kernoodle against Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, and some of the stuff he did with Jim Crockett Promotions, I think all that lends credibility to Sergeant Slaughter. He was, you know, a decorated wrestler, even though some of his most significant decorations came later in his career after his work rate had rescinded. WWE champion briefly during a very ill-advised angle. His time period he spent in the AWA was very, very disappointing and really hurt his legacy. Yet he has longevity for the most part. But it's really his stuff prior to the AWA on which his case stands. And while I don't think he is an overwhelming, absolute no-brainer Hall of Famer, for a little rhyme there, I do think he passes the threshold. Comparing him to some of the people that are already in, I think he makes the cut. I have oftentimes voted for Sergeant Slaughter. Now, I ran a very popular and well received and well-distributed article at whenitwascool.com about my voting for Sergeant Slaughter in the Hall of Fame. And I have a real problem, and still do have a real problem, with him misrepresenting to the legitimate press in shoot interviews where what's he's saying is supposed to be legitimate and supposed to be truthful, that he was a legitimate military veteran, and even so far as saying and claiming that he was in Vietnam. He was not. He was not in the military, and he was not certainly in Vietnam. These are provable, demonstrative facts. He certainly wasn't in the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps even issued a statement saying that he was not, and featured my article and the research I did in it in an article in the Marine Corps magazine. Something I'm very proud to have had happen was some of my work being featured in an article in the Marine Corps magazine about Sergeant Slaughter essentially committing the crime of stolen valor. Now, the character of Sergeant Slaughter can claim anything. He can claim to be a member of G.I. Joe fighting Cobra, you know, because that's what Sergeant Slaughter did, the character. Sergeant Slaughter could have fought in Vietnam. He's a fictional character. That is fine. But when Robert Remus is talking to the legitimate press, doing an interview with a legitimate press source, or a shoot interview where it is represented that what's being told is truthful, then that is a problem. That is a lie. That is a misrepresentation. It is a disrespect to true military servicemen, and he should stop doing it. And he has done it many times. And in my opinion, he needs to issue a statement apologizing for that and clarifying the fact that Robert Remus was not in the military. Now, I actually stopped voting for him for a couple years based on that, but I did, in all fairness, vote for him last year. And, you know, again, there's no real morality clause in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame beyond the kind of vague statement of they need to have a positive historical impact. For that, you could certainly include people like there was a recall election for Chris Benoit. Certainly that's worthy of conversation for people like Jimmy Snuka, who also is in. But other candidates, who we'll talk about in just a moment, it's Dave's just kind of left it up to the individual voters whether we impose our own morality clause. And I have to be honest with you, Sergeant Slaughter, I would be more strongly an advocate for if he would issue that statement. That being said, this could be his last year on the ballot. We will see. He's come very close to getting in the past. Enrique Torres is someone I'm not really that qualified to talk about. I know he's been advocated by Mike Sempervivi, and I trust Mike's knowledge and opinion about Enrique Torres. And as I've worked very tirelessly on the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling timeline over at When It Was Cool, I've run across a lot about Enrique Torres. Enrique Torres certainly does seem like he has a strong case, but I myself personally am not an expert on Enrique Torres beyond just what data I've entered into the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling timeline. So to me, I need some more convincing about Enrique Torres, as apparently the other voters have as well for the last 15 years. So right now, I'm not planning on voting for Enrique Torres, but I am open, very open, to entertaining cases for Enrique Torres. Now, the third one is another one. This is where our morality clause, again, comes into possible being, and that is Rocky Johnson. Yes, the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Was a very famous wrestler back in the day. He was an excellent wrestler. Rocky Johnson was a tremendous athletic wrestler. He was a strong guy. He had great power. He had tremendous agility. He had one of the best-looking drop kicks I ever saw. His gimmick is kind of being a former boxer. Was a very good gimmick for back in the day. There is evidence that he was a strong draw, especially in certain territories. I personally saw the most of Rocky Johnson in Memphis when he was there, although I've seen almost the entirety of what's available on video to see of his WWF run as well. And I've always been kind of borderline on Rocky Johnson anyway. But Rocky Johnson has some stories about him that are out there. There have been some investigations and some allegations made against Rocky Johnson in the past, which, if it turns out to be true, of course, Rocky Johnson has passed away. There would be no criminal charges, so there would be no investigation about it. But what has been out there is disturbing. And I'm not going to go into those allegations here. They're easily to be found with a Google search, and I have some real problems with that. So, again, I am not ruling out Rocky Johnson, but if the things that are alleged against him as far as sexual crimes he may or may not have participated in or have committed, that would certainly impact my vote. So there are the three, and of the three candidates who are about to be dropped from the list, Sergeant Slaughter is the only one I can say I am likely to vote for. Again, I'm not ruling anybody out, Enrique Torres nor Rocky Johnson, but I do have to say that of the three right now, the only one I can say there's a better than 75% chance of voting for would be Sergeant Slaughter. Now, if Sergeant Slaughter comes out and issues a statement that says, hey, guys, I just want to remind everybody I was in Vietnam and a sergeant in the Marine Corps, then I'm probably not voting for Sergeant Slaughter. But I do wish he would say something and clarify that.
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network. In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. whenitwascool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.
Okay, so let us now discuss the historical performers era candidates. And again, there are some mislistings in here, which we'll address as we go along. Some people have been inaccurately put in the modern era that should be in historic. But let's get on with the names here. We're going to begin with a tag team that's been added to our list this year for consideration. The East-West Connection, Adrian Adonis, Jesse the Body Ventura, of course, former AWA World Tag Team Champions, a very good team, a very interesting team. This is not one of those bookend tag teams like, you know, Rock and Roll Express or Midnight Express or Fabulous Ones, Fantastics, where, you know, the two members are similar to one another. These are two very different wrestlers. Adrian Adonis was the workhorse of this team. He was the guy taking big bumps. And back at that point in time, Adrian Adonis was not in the terrible shape he would later get in during his WWF run. He was a guy who could go. In fact, it's oftentimes, I think credibly so, it wasn't Jimmy Superfly Snuka who done the first big dive off the top of a steel cage. It was probably Adrian Adonis. He for sure predated Superfly Snuka's dive off the top of the steel cage with a dive in a cage match with Jesse Ventura against Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzell there in the AWA. Jesse Ventura was your big bodybuilder type who was the talker, not much of an in-ring worker to say, but certainly tons of personality. And so they complemented each other very, very well. Maybe longevity sort of works against them. The fact that they were only, you know, really a big deal in the AWA, it didn't translate over to the WWF. In fact, they put Adrian Adonis with Dick Murdoch as the North-South connection as sort of a take on what they did there, while Jesse Ventura was a singles wrestler for a while and then ultimately, due to health concerns, became a color commentator. Just my knee-jerk reaction to Adonis and Ventura, to me, they fall a little below of what I would... I can think of many more tag teams, or at least a few more tag teams, I would consider over them by voting. I'm not saying they are bad candidates. I don't think they are. But I can just immediately, off the top of my head, think of several better candidates for tag teams to be included. And even though we get a few extra votes this year because of all the additions to the tag team, when I finally put my ballot together and start listing everybody in order of, okay, this is the most qualified person, this is the next most qualified, so on and so forth, I have a feeling that Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura are going to fall below that 18 threshold. I think I will have more than that above them. Again, as with all these, I am, you know, open to research and cases being made for them. But just off the top of my head, my initial knee-jerk reaction is they were a great team, certainly very historically well remembered, but below the Hall of Fame level, I think. Ole Anderson, as a singles wrestler, I just don't see the case for Ole Anderson. I just don't. The Andersons as a tag team were on there forever. And even then, I mean, they got really no support. Well, they got support, but not to the degree to get in. But Ole Anderson is a singles wrestler. How do you make any sort of case for him as a singles wrestler? I mean, no major promotion, and back in that time, you would have had, I mean, AWA, NWA, WWF, any of the Japanese organizations. I don't remember if WWA was still, you know, doing big business by the time Ole Anderson started or not. That I have to go back and look at my timeline to see how that lines up. But I just don't see Ole Anderson as having any sort of case for being in the Hall of Fame as a singles wrestler. Again, open to suggestion, but I don't think so. And next on the list is a guy who certainly, I mean, he was one of my favorite wrestlers ever, Bob Armstrong. He was the top babyface in my favorite area, Southeastern Championship Wrestling, later Continental Wrestling. He was a big deal in Memphis, obviously a huge deal in Georgia. I mean, he was a big star, top babyface in several areas. But I don't think Bob Armstrong's anywhere close to the criteria for Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. I know he's in the WWE Hall of Fame. I think the world of Bob Armstrong and his family, and you know, one of my favorite wrestlers again. But let's just be realistic. This isn't a Hall of Carl's favorite wrestlers. This is the Hall of Fame, the Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, with journalistic integrity, a set of very difficult criteria. It should be hard to get into. And Bob Armstrong, I mean, on a national or even international, I mean, Bob Armstrong had very little, if any, international experience. And in the United States, he just wasn't nationally a big deal. I've said this every year when discussing Bob Armstrong. If you're doing a Southeastern, a Southern States Hall of Fame, Bob Armstrong is in your first class. He is easily inducted in. But for the entire world, the entire, or in this case, in this category, maybe North America or whatever, no, he's not there. Bob Armstrong was never just a, you know, as far as work rate goes, for whatever that's, and look, it shouldn't even by now need explaining that I am not a work rate guy. I don't care about your flips. I don't care about your 5 to 7 star matches. I care about personality. I care about whether you make me want to watch you on television or buy a ticket to see you, make me care about you and your character, make me care about you and your programs. That is far more important to me than how well you impress Dave with your moves. Okay, Bob was never that. He was a competent, good, solid in-ring worker, more of a brawler than anything. Very athletic. He didn't look charismatic. I mean, he had the dark curly hair, and he was, you know, a handsome enough guy early on, but he wasn't like a Ric Flair or a Gorgeous George or something like that. But he was athletic, but he had great charisma. His interviews are tremendous. I mean, and again, if Bob Armstrong would have continued that 1983 heel run or had some version of that same heel run in other promotions, he was already a 40-year-old man at that point in time when he did that. Had he done that elsewhere, man, he may be remembered as one of the greatest of all times, because even though he hated being a heel, he was probably the best heel I ever saw. Hands down. I even do a podcast when it was cool called the Heel Mustache Podcast in honor of Heel Bob Armstrong. So I love Bob Armstrong, but I mean, I could not make a legitimate case for him in the Observer Hall of Fame. Jack and Jerry Briscoe is a tag team. That's interesting. Jack Briscoe, obviously, I mean, no question about him being in the Hall of Fame. One of the great NWA world champions. I've been watching some Jack Briscoe footage recently. Somebody posted some on Twitter, and that got me kind of going down a rabbit hole of Jack Briscoe a little bit. Man, he was so great and really forgotten kind of by this modern era. Well, Jack Briscoe was tremendous. Jack and Jerry as a tag team, I don't know. What is the case for them? I mean, you know, the work they did in Mid-Atlantic, I watch it. It's fine. To even very great at times. Their WWF run at the end of their career is utterly unremarkable. But again, that was the last gasp of the Briscoes was that, you know, that time they spent in the WWF. So, what is the case for Jack and Jerry Briscoe as a tag team? I don't just obviously see one. They're not, I mean, they were decorated, sure, everywhere they went. They held some championships and stuff. But when I think of all-time great teams, the Briscoes just aren't, you know, right up there on top of mine. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I need to revisit the Briscoe brothers as a tag team. But when I think of the Briscoes, I think about Jack Briscoe as the world heavyweight champion, and there's no question about that. I think of Jerry Briscoe as a, you know, a junior heavyweight champion contender, and the guy who was sort of come along with Jack, sort of living in Jack's shadow, really, and then the later day, you know, Stooges era Jack Briscoe act, or Jerry Briscoe act that he had there up there in WWF. So it's interesting. I will read with great curiosity some of the cases that people will be making for Jack and Jerry Briscoe. June Byers. I feel like June Byers has been on this ballot for a long time, and maybe she dropped off and has been put back on. I've said this many times, I'll say it again, I am not in any way, shape, or form a expert or a fan of ladies wrestling historically or modern day. I don't follow it. It's not a thing that interests me, so I'm not even going to comment on whether they are, because I'm not qualified to. I'm not qualified to say June Byers may be the greatest ladies wrestling champion of all time. She may be the greatest Hall of Fame contender. I'm just not qualified to say one way or the other. So I'll leave that to those who are. Juan Nunez comes to mind, who is also a voter in the Hall of Fame. He is a great expert on things of this nature, so I would defer to people like him who actually know what they're talking about, not myself. Wild Bull Curry. Okay, is that a name that's come back up recently? Because I feel like that's a name that's probably been on there forever and maybe was brought back. I'm not sure, again, what Wild Bull Curry would, which is a great name, by the way. I've always thought the name Wild Bull Curry was spoke pro wrestling. But again, as I do the work on the website, do all the data entry into the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling timeline, I just, you know, I see Wild Bull Curry a lot. I see, you know, his big matches. I see his, you know, he a very prolific wrestler. But I just don't see the case for him. I mean, when I think Hall of Fame, I think these great drawing stars, I think about, you know, your world champions, especially the ones that held it for a long period of time. I think about, you know, great matches, historically significant matches. And I just don't come up with that much for Wild Bull Curry. I know he was a very liked wrestler, very revered. But, again, I would have to see more for that. Now, your next tag team, I think, is going to be super interesting to see how they do. This one gets my attention. The British Bulldogs, Dynamite Kid, and Davey Boy Smith. All right, so let's go ahead and concede Dynamite Kid is a member of the Hall of Fame, as well he should be. Very innovative, trendsetter, style setter. Probably not the most likable human being ever. Maybe your morality clause prevents you from thinking of Dynamite Kid as a member here, but athletically speaking, career-wise speaking, Dynamite Kid, no question. Davey Boy Smith is a singles wrestler. Well, I mean, he doesn't have anything near the case that Dynamite Kid had to get in. He was a good, solid, upper mid-card wrestler singles-wise for WWF and even briefly a little bit for WCW, but he wasn't the main event guy, wasn't going to be the main event guy. Yes, he had that great SummerSlam match against Bret Hart, which Bret Hart in his own book talks about carrying a completely lost Davey Boy Smith all the way through that match, that doesn't even know, he just completely blanks out on everything he's supposed to do. I have a hard time calling that guy Hall of Famer. He was super over, and Bret led him through a great match. So singles wrestler, well, you know, he's not in, and I don't think he deserves to be in. But as a tag team, what about the British Bulldogs? Are they innovative? Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think they are. They have the WWF World Tag Team Championship legacy. They have all that they did in Japan and certainly in Stampede as a legacy. So internationally speaking, spread across, from Canada to the United States over to Japan, they've certainly worked a lot of different places. We're always, having exceptional matches. I would have liked to have seen a little more territorial work out of the British Bulldogs. I would have liked to have seen them, and at one point in time they were set to come to Bill Watts Mid-South Wrestling, but that didn't take place. I would have liked to have seen them, have some more travels. I would have liked to have seen them in World Class. I would have liked to have seen them in Mid-Atlantic or Florida or something like that for extended periods of time. But still, on a national, man, when WWF broke national, really broke national, after Hogan wins the WWF title and you start having like WrestleMania, I mean, the best thing on the card a lot of times were whatever the British Bulldogs, whatever match they were in. That's significant to me, I think. I'm going to be putting British Bulldogs on my ballot. I look forward to seeing cases made pro and con for the British Bulldogs. I'm looking to see some statistics that I'm sure people will roll out. But I feel like my gut feeling is British Bulldogs are a yes. Now, tag teams have historically had a hard time getting in the Hall of Fame. It took the Rock and Roll Express forever to get in. Midnight Express is in. Road Warriors are in. And I think that they all should be. But they're few and far between. But when you think about historical tag teams, the British Bulldogs, you start just naming them. Name the greatest tag teams of all time. The British Bulldogs are in that certainly top 10 conversation, probably top five conversation. Wouldn't you say the British Bulldogs are in the top five conversation? And then the question becomes, well, are those other top five tag teams in the Hall of Fame? And I don't necessarily think they are. We'll see as more tag teams come. I know one's not, and one team I'm certainly going to be voting for, because I've been doing a lot of research on them over the last year or so by working on the timeline. There's no question, but British Bulldogs, I'm considering them. When I make my list out, will they make that cut? They're going to be written down, and whether they end up making the cut or not, we'll see, but very, very interesting. Cowboy Bob Ellis is another guy I feel like has probably been on the ballot before or forever. I'm not a big fan of Cowboy Bob Ellis. He was sort of a shady kind of guy. I mean, he got in some legal troubles, I think, along the way. He was, as far as his wrestling career goes, is he much different than Ole Anderson and Bob Armstrong as far as the argument goes for him being in the Hall of Fame? Maybe a little bit, maybe. Probably a little bit. I would think Cowboy Bob Ellis would, if you were just making a list, if you listed every single person on this Hall of Fame ballot, in their order of how great they were and how much they deserve to be in this Hall of Fame, I think Bob Ellis comes above them on that list, but I don't think he comes up to the threshold. I don't think he makes it in there. And it's evidenced by the fact, you know, he's a wrestler from that long ago that's not in. Undoubtedly, other people felt the same way. You could say the same thing for Pampero Ferpo. Again, a great name, a great act, a great look. You know, the Wild Bull of the Pampas. You know, it was a great character for sure. But you know, he falls below the criteria. Again, he's a great character actor. If we were talking in terms of Hollywood actors, great character actor, great look, great name, great. People certainly remember him. By all accounts, a super nice guy. But Hall of Famer on the par of the other people that are in the Observer Hall of Fame. Think of the worst person in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Are they better than Pampero Ferpo? You know, that's for each voter to decide themselves. But I have never considered Pampero Ferpo for my Hall of Fame ballot. Here is an interesting team, and I have to admit, I'm going to plead a little bit of lack of education on these two because they're before my time. But I've always heard about, repeatedly, Black Gordman and Great Goliath. Now, this is one of your great Los Angeles tag teams. This is one of your great Southern California tag teams. What I've seen of them, which is admittedly not a lot, I'm not particularly blown away by them, but something about them clicked. A team like Black Gordman and Great Goliath to me is a lot of fun in Hall of Fame season because it gives me a chance to learn something about people I don't know that much of. The Black Gordman and Great Goliath were well before my time. I didn't grow up with them. I just grew up hearing about them. Now, I mean, they were still wrestling up to the time I started watching wrestling, but they were about done. But nothing I've seen so far tells me that they're Hall of Fame. But I'm interested to see what kind of case other people made because, again, hey, maybe they were big stars in some area I never previously realized. So that's something to definitely pay attention to. We'll see. I look forward to reading people's take on Black Gordman and Great Goliath. Mongolian Stomper, Archie Gouldy. Okay, he's right there in that Bob Armstrong, Ole Anderson, Cowboy Bob Ellis territory, Pampero Ferpo. In fact, I think he's kind of relatable, honestly, to Pampero Ferpo. He's a great character actor. The Mongolian Stomper gimmick was great. He was very successful in the southeastern, southern United States, be it Knoxville, be it Pensacola. He had good success in Central States. He was in AWA shortly. I guess his most standout performance would have been in Stampede Wrestling, whereas Archie Gouldy, he actually cut promos and was very good about it. He got tremendous heat in Stampede. Probably his strongest case as a Hall of Famer would come from his time in Stampede Wrestling, right? I think so. Otherwise, he's just literally a stomper and kicker. Now, he's never come close to getting in the Hall of Fame. I guess he just keeps getting enough votes to be on the ballot. I don't see him as any threat to getting in the Hall of Fame. And to me, he's even though I like the Mongolian Stomper, he's one of my favorites as a kid, watching him in Southeastern Wrestling, beat up Austin Idol and feud with Bob Armstrong and whoever the top babyface was at the moment, Jimmy Golden or whoever, Ron Fuller. I liked the Mongolian Stomper. He was a favorite as a kid, but he's not, in my opinion, anywhere close to the Hall of Fame, the Observer Hall of Fame. So here's another one. When we talked about the British Bulldogs, man, you got to put them right up there. They're probably equitable to the British Bulldogs. The Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart as a team. Bret Hart, obviously, as well, he should be in the Hall of Fame already. Jim Neidhart is kind of the Robert Gibson of this situation in that nobody's going to vote for Jim Neidhart to be in the Observer Hall of Fame. However, as a tag team, you've got to give credit to the Hart Foundation. Very successful, very memorable from their early time in the WWF, when, you know, just after the national expansion's going good. I mean, the Hart Foundation's in there. So, once again, just like the British Bulldogs, many times your best match on the card was the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart. So I feel like my gut reaction is yes, but I think I'm more of a fan of tag teams than a lot of the voters in the Observer Hall of Fame are. Like, I give more credence to tag teams than a lot of people do. I feel like there's a real bias in the Hall of Fame against tag teams. And I'm not saying that bias is wrong. Maybe that bias is right, and my affinity for tag teams is wrong, because I grew up on watching Southeastern and Continental Wrestling, where tag teams were very important. Memphis Wrestling, where tag teams were a focus. Mid-South Wrestling, where tag teams were a focus. I was a fan of tag teams. And so maybe I remember them more fondly than perhaps I should. But my gut reaction says yes to the Hart Foundation. We'll see. So what about the Rockers, or the Midnight Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty? And as great as they are, as great as they were, tremendous in-ring workers, maybe just short of the British Bulldogs in terms of being, you know, the best of the tag teams we've talked about so far as in-ring work. Their outer ring, their case as a tag team is a little weaker. I mean, they were a Rock and Roll Express knockoff, obviously. They were the AWA Vern Gagne's, got pushed into making his own Rock and Roll Express. This is what they came up with. It happened to be two great workers. The Midnight Rockers were tremendous in the AWA. Admittedly, AWA on the decline. They ended up having great matches with Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. Buddy Rose was a great wrestler, and that all worked very good. But let's face it. I mean, that's not top tier. AWA during that time, they didn't have a lot to work with, so they stood out in this field. They go to Continental and, quite frankly, make no kind of impact there. They're in Memphis for a little bit as heels, mind you, and they're fine, but they're not one of the all-time great Memphis tag teams, not even close. In WWF, they never even get a run with the WWF tag team titles. They have some of the best matches on the shows, again, with regularity, but they're never really the main event. They're never really pushed at, like, as much as I like the Rockers, the Midnight Rockers, I just don't see it reaching that. And again, maybe they were your favorite tag team growing up, and for many people, they were. And I liked them. I thought they were great. But did they make Hall of Fame? Shawn Michaels, of course, he's in the Hall of Fame, as he should be. But as a tag team, do Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty make that cut? Well, I'm putting them below the British Bulldogs for sure. I'm putting them below the Hart Foundation for sure. So in the tag teams we've talked about so far, what about Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura? I'm not sure which I'd rank above the other one there. Probably would rank Adonis and Ventura above them, just based on the quality of opposition they had, the quality of teams they were working with. But I reserve my right to change my mind there once I think about it a little bit. Again, I'm doing this all off the top of my head, so to me, they're a little weaker. Sputnik Monroe's been on this thing forever, for a long time, still keeps getting just enough votes to stay on. Sputnik Monroe, one of his primary claims to being in the Hall of Fame was his historical importance in the desegregation of Memphis wrestling, desegregation of Memphis in general, by, you know, demanding that African Americans be able to purchase the same tickets as anybody else. I think he and I really think Norvell Austin should be kind of linked along with him on those same lines. Sputnik Monroe was a top star in several of these Southern promotions that were before my time period. Everything I've ever heard about him was it wasn't the greatest wrestler. I actually met Sputnik Monroe before he died. I met Sputnik Monroe one time and had the opportunity to talk to him there in Memphis, Tennessee. He struck me as, like most old-timers, you know, everything was better and real back in my day, and I am a real guy who would really wrestle and hurt people. And so he was kind of a fun, old, you know, veteran to talk to. He seemed like a guy, a cantankerous old man that you probably wouldn't want to mess with. But he was, as far as his Hall of Fame credentials go, I mean, he's just not there. I mean, nationally speaking, what did Sputnik Monroe do? Besides his historical importance, significance in a positive manner, which, again, you got to kind of go with the promoters there, too, for backing him, doing some of the stuff they did. And also, again, I think you've got to put Norvell Austin, give him at least, you know, some props as to being involved in that whole time period also. But it's, I don't know. For me, Sputnik Monroe is a no, but I do admit the cases for him is interesting. Blackjack Mulligan, I see no case for it. Maybe Blackjack Mulligan is part of the Blackjacks tag team with Blackjack Lanza. Maybe you can make some arguments. Even then, I think it's a weak case. But Blackjack Mulligan is a singles wrestler. Where comes in the argument for Blackjack Mulligan as a singles wrestler? Please point me to this great Blackjack Mulligan singles run. And in Florida, I mean, the strength of one territory, one regional territory, I don't see it. I mean, to me, Blackjack Mulligan is kind of like Bob Armstrong. If Bob Armstrong would have got a cup of coffee in the WWF, whatever. But again, you can't. Now, one thing, Blackjack Mulligan does have a leg up on, you know, Bob Armstrong and Ole Anderson. Well, not Ole Anderson. And that's part of being a great tag team. So do you defer to the tag team or do you defer to Blackjack? I just don't see the case for Blackjack Mulligan. I just cannot see it. All right, so we're going to take a quick break right here because when we come back, we've got three tag teams that are going to require a lot of discussion. So when I put up the second half of this show, the second part of our Hall of Fame discussion, we're going to pick up with Harley Race and Larry Hennig as a tag team, Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch, the Texas Outlaws, as a tag team, and Argentina Rocca and Miguel Perez as a tag team. And I will have a lot to say about each of those. And so I knew there was no chance of us getting all the way through this ballot. I mean, we got about three-fourths of the way through the historical performers category. We ain't even got to the modern performers. So this is going to take a bit. So how are you getting there with me? But this is a good time to take a break right here before we come back and discuss multiple great tag teams that are on this ballot. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you will support me over at whenitwascool.com. And I guess this is many of you at Observer. I haven't talked to you about this yet, but I have ceased work presently on the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling timeline. The reason being is because I just don't think it's being supported financially to the degree to justify the amount of work I put into it. I literally have been for the last year or so manually putting in about 100 pages worth of results, text, historical events into that database per month. About 100 pages. That's many hours worth of work. And I have other people that are helping me. Paul Sosnowski has been a tremendous help in getting that timeline correct and putting many additions to it. He has done a great deal of tremendous research in there. Far smarter than me about a lot of wrestling history. And so I've been putting a lot of work. But people at whenitwascool.com are very well supporting our podcast, and tremendously so. And thank you to everybody that is. But that particular project in and of itself is really not paying the bill, so to speak. So I've put it on pause until at least November, if not December 1st. If we get back up, we're about six Patreons away. I don't think that's true. I think we're actually closer to about eight Patreons away from me resuming work. I've got a goal set up on our Patreon page. And if we exceed that goal again, which, again, we're probably less than 10 Patreons away from me picking back up work. I will pick back up work on this. So if you think this is a worthwhile project, go. First of all, you may have never seen the Ultimate Timeline History of Pro Wrestling. Go to whenitwascool.com and click on Dragon King Carl's Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling. And just look. I mean, there is wrestling history documented from the Pioneer era all the way up to the year 2000. I promise you, you're going to find stuff you never knew happened on that timeline in chronological order. If you think that's worthy of chronicling for historical purposes, then please become a Patreon supporter at whenitwascool.com. All right, now I'll see you back with part two of this show coming up in a day or so. So keep an eye on the feeds for the next installment of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame Ballot Discussion 2022.
Hey everybody, Carl here from whenitwascool.com. I've talked to you a lot about our Patreon, which is the most important way you can support us. But let me remind you of what else we do. You can follow us on social media on both Facebook and Twitter. Grab the links off the front page of whenitwascool.com. Check out all of our free podcasts on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and other major podcast outlets. Check out Dragon King Dark, along with Stuck in the Desert podcast, Uphill Both Ways, Wrestling with the Dog, The Thrash Metal Show, Life and Times with KZ, our new show, The Plot, Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show, Fireside Chat, and Heel Mustache podcast, plus many specials every month. Go to whenitwascool.com for everything retro pop culture and more. Hit that Patreon link for premium podcast content. If you're looking for something fresh and fun to listen to, then bookmark whenitwascool.com.